quite simple, really. Great stories with a good cup of tea. It's the Tea with Mike show. On this episode of the show, we welcomed Barry and McQueen. We're talking about marketing, music, public relations, and writing. So grab a cup of tea. Sit back.
Guys, welcome to another episode of the Tea with Mike show. Joining me for this one is a top marketing expert, a PR and branding specialist, also a best-selling author, and a music artist consultant. Lots of different things for us to dive into today, so please welcome to the Tea with Mike show, Barrion McQueen. Welcome to the show, man.
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for being here. So let's start diving into your journey and your story. So nice and easy to start off. Like, where did you grow up?
So I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. Born and raised there, and single mom, all sisters, no brothers. And you know, I used to be in the music business. And I kind of always had a connection to music, even after I kind of retired from being an artist, but I was still doing a lot behind the scenes. So I never really left the music industry, just a different position in the music business. I relocated to Florida in 2013, to Fort Lauderdale. I'm in Fort Lauderdale, Florida now. And it's been a very challenging journey, but it's all worth it. So now I own a couple companies here in Florida and just trying to grow them every day.
Awesome. Let's go back a few years. How did you first become interested in music? Was it in school? Was it outside of school? Like, what's the story there?
I actually used to do poetry, right? So I used to do poetry, and a friend of mine's in school, this is probably grade school, right before high school, he's like, yo, man, you know, I produce music. You should start doing some of your poetry to my music in the background. So I'm like, oh, that's different. Like, so I started doing it. He was like, yo, man, you could be a rapper. Like, the stuff you be coming up with on my beats, you should really take it serious. And then I like that much better than just the regular spoken word poetry. And then I just got really good at it and started doing music. So I got my first record deal when I was 18.
Wow.
With Epic Records. And for me, that was a big accomplishment because that's where Michael Jackson got his record deal. So,
oh, no way. That's cool.
Yeah. So, you know, at the time, Epic Records was not a hip-hop based record label. It was more pop, R&B, soft rock at the time. Now it's like one of the biggest hip hop labels, but at that time, it wasn't. So I got my first deal at 18. The guy who signed me got fired. And once those people get fired who signed you, you're just a number at the record label. So they told me, hey, you know, we're going in a different direction, and they dropped me. So I didn't get my next record deal until I was 21. And that was with Universal. And kind of the same thing, you know, the guy who found me job, you know, the A&R's positions at these record labels are not secure positions. You know, it's a rotating door in that industry. So, you know, if you don't have good people who seek out to you from these major labels, you just get lost in the shuffle, man.
Interesting.
You hear about artists that get signed and then they never come out, they never release music, they never do an album, and it's that reason why.
Interesting. And what was it that sparked your interest in like spoken word, like poetry, in the first place?
I think I just liked writing
at the time.
And so it was just really just I probably was expressing my thoughts really. And just putting it in the rhyme form. Sometimes they rhymed, sometimes they didn't rhyme, but it was just really my way to express. You know, I've always been, even when I got so good at music that I didn't really have to write lyrics down anymore, it was more of a therapeutic process the process of just actually writing. So I think that's what it was more of. That was my therapy.
Do you have anyone in your family that you can credit your good natural rhythm in music and even the writing portion in poetry to? Or is it self-taught?
Family members that were just, you know, all around musicians, you know, piano players. You know, I drummed since a kid. I was the drummer through church all the way up until I stopped going to church as I got older. But I think music's just been in my family in general.
Awesome. And then so obviously now you're still involved in the music industry, but in a little bit of a different role as an artist consultant. So what is the first music that you remember hearing, and why was it so memorable?
I think from a music standpoint, you know, I used to listen to like the old music, right? So, you know, Saturday mornings, you know, in the household, that's the day everybody wakes up.
On the radio?
Yeah. So, you know, that's the time when everybody in the house has got to clean the house. And then, you know, either if I'm at my mom's or I'm at my grandmother's house, the music just always was in the background. So people say I got a really old soul because I know a lot of the music from the 70s and the 80s. And it's not that I'm just that knowledgeable. It's just like I was listening. My grandma was playing it all the time, right? So I listened to a lot of the Otis Reddings and the Luther Vandrosses and the Aretha Franklins and a lot of those 70s and 80s girl groups, because that's what my grandma was playing Saturday mornings, cleaning the house. So I have a very eclectic ear when it comes to music.
Nice. And then who's your kind of favorite artist from the 70s and 80s?
I love Otis Redding. I love the Temptations. I love the Shy Lights, Marvin Gaye. I mean, that's so many artists. Those were like the golden eras, man.
Now, and obviously you just listed off a few different artists from that time period. What is it about the music in the 70s and 80s that stands out for you the most? Is it the lyrics? Is it the tone? Is it the soul? That type of thing?
I think it was just the music felt so timeless back then, right? So it's like if you play any of that stuff anywhere in the world now, it's so timeless that it still brings you a nostalgic feel of you can remember where you were when you first heard that record. I don't think a lot of the music that's out today can stand the test of time like those old records, you know. Michael Jackson's catalog is timeless. The Beatles catalogs is timeless. Like Elton John, for Christ's sake, stuff is timeless. Celine Dion. So these type of artists, it's hard to come by, but those are classic records that, you know, they give you a sense of nostalgia when you hear them. And I don't think it's no artist, I think, today that gives me that same kind of feel as those records did back in the day.
Nice. And then obviously you mentioned when you were a child that you played the drums.
Yes.
And stuff, and obviously involved a little bit in family music and some church-like stuff. So how many instruments did you learn to play as a child?
Drums was the one that I mastered. I attempted piano. I attempted saxophone. I attempted guitar. I attempted the triangle. I mean, I've tried probably every instrument, but really, you know, when it came to rhythm, the drums just always spoke to me. It didn't matter what type of drum, if it was a 5-piece set, a 7-piece set, if it was just 2 bongos, you know, it didn't matter. Drums was my thing. So master of drums and no master of all the other instruments.
Now, Now, do you think you enjoyed the drums the most? Is it just because you naturally picked it up the fastest, or was it the one you enjoyed jamming out with more? Or
I think it was experience on? Just natural, you know.
Just natural?
Even when it comes to piano, right? So I can play the piano, but I can't read the music and understand. Like, I could just play by ear. Like, I know what the keys sound, each key makes. So I'm a play by ear kind of pianist, but the drums, it just was effortless to me. It didn't feel like something I had to learn other like the other instruments.
Interesting. And so have you found the process of all the experience of learning drums, has anything about it been challenging, or is it just one of those beautiful timeless things that just happened over time?
Just, I don't know. You know, every time I go to my mom's house when I fly back home, I always see this. My first drum set was a Sesame Street drum set.
Oh, cool.
I must have been 4 when I had that drum set. I still remember the day I got that drum set. But it just came, you know, as a kid, you just like banging stuff in general, right?
Yeah, so, eventually.
Yeah, you know, I'll make drums out of all my mom's Tupperwares. And yeah. It was just something about the drums that... It was so natural to me. It didn't feel like I needed to practice or I needed to learn, and it just was a natural thing for me.
Fantastic. So obviously you had a very musical kind of childhood. Obviously you had some success as an artist with the two record deals at 18 and 21. But then I believe it's towards the end of your time playing music at that stage, you decided to study civil engineering at the University of Delaware.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to go down that path?
So as a child, going into high school, I went to a vocational high school where you had to learn a trade, right? So you was going to be a mechanic, a carpenter. So the trade that I selected was technical drafting. So with technical drafting, you know, it was more architecture based and
CAD
blueprints and things like that.
Lots of measurements and funky numbers. Yeah,
exactly. So that was the closest class that they had to drawing. Like, I always loved drawing and sketching. So technical drafting was the trade that I picked. And then about my junior year in high school, the school helps you find like your first job, right, within the trade. So by 11th grade, I was going to school half day and going to work half day already.
Also, like work experience.
Correct. So I started working for a engineering firm, and this was always supposed to be my plan B if music didn't work out, right? So my mom stressed, you need to go to college, you need to get a degree in something, you need to do this. And I'm like, I'm gonna be a big rap star, mom, I don't need that. But just to appease you and make you happy, I'm gonna go to college, get this piece of paper that you tell me I must have in order to succeed in life, and I'm going to go get a civil engineering degree, and I'm never going to use it because I'm going to be a rapper. So that was my mindset. And I never finished college. I dropped out my junior year of college at UD, University of Delaware. And I'm not a big fan of college.
Interesting. So did you drop out because you weren't enjoying it? Did you drop out because you felt like you were wasting time? Why were you on the kind of spectrum?
In all honesty, I dropped out because I started working at the company in 11th grade. So by the time I graduated high school, the company already hired me full time. So I was working full time and going to school full time. And so the problem was, is the further I got along in the degree, in order to finish the degree, I would have had to quit the job.
The more time it took.
Right. So it was just like, do I quit the job that I'm going to school for to get the job or what? Like, so I already had the job. So it was just like, yo, if you want to graduate, you know, you need to quit the job. And I'm like, well, if I graduate, the job I'm doing now is going to be the one I'm looking for when I graduate. So I said, oh, I got the job already. There's no need to keep going to school. So nothing's going to teach me engineering like being in the field and actually doing it. So I quit.
Right.
And of course, my mom was pissed. And, you know, I had to pay that school that money. But you know, I got the college experience. I lived on campus, did the dorm thing. I'm just not a fan of what college is to certain professions, right? You want to be a doctor, I think you should go to college. You want to be a lawyer, I think you should go to college. If you want to study frog anatomy, I don't think you should be in college trying to get a degree for that.
You need
right?
to be out there examining frogs in the lab.
So it's like,
so that practical element, right?
Yeah, like I'm not the biggest fan of college if it's not necessary.
Awesome. And then so you quit university, you've already got a job, which is kind of cool from your work experience. You started in grade 11, and then you spent about the next 13 years working in the construction industry?
13 years. Unbelievable to hear that come off your mouth. 13 years. You know, my resume is very skinny. I literally have had maybe two or three jobs my whole life.
Oh, wow.
I'm 35 now. I spent 13 years at that company. I spent 6 years at another company when I left Delaware. And, you know, my resume is very light.
Interesting. Just briefly, because this is a transition point in your story. Were those 13 years like kind of showing up, getting the paycheck, like going home? Were you doing anything on the side?
You know what's funny about that? Throughout that whole 13 years, I was almost living a double life, right? So because I had some success in the music business, I would work Monday to Friday at 4 o'clock. And from Friday at 4 o'clock until Sunday at maybe the next day, I was a rap star, man. I was traveling the world on the weekends, touring. So it was literally like night and day. Like I was one person Monday through Friday. And then when Friday evening to Sunday came, it was a totally different lifestyle.
So you were touring and you were doing shows and events.
Well, it was like Superman, man. I was doing two different things, balancing them off little to no sleep, and I did that for years.
Now, obviously, we're reflecting back a tiny bit as we're talking. Like, did you enjoy those years of your life? Like on the go, 24/7. Two completely different like areas, right?
Yeah, I think what it was is because I understood that in order to get my career musically where I needed to be, it cost money, right? So I always looked at my job at the engineering firm as the investment into my music career, you know. So I invested that before I went to any record labels trying to get them to invest, and I did all of that stuff myself. So I took those paychecks and I bought my own studio equipment and I bought a tour van and we hit the city every weekend, me and my friends. I'm like, yo, we in Rhode Island this weekend, we in New York next weekend. We, like, you know, I would just book myself out. And we Friday evening, afternoon, we was on our way to a new city every weekend.
That's so cool. That's almost like a story within itself, isn't it?
It was.
Awesome. And then, all right, so we're going to have a little tea fact for a moment, and then we'll get diving into the transition into digital marketing and some of the things you're doing today.
Okay.
So according to the Guinness World Records, the most expensive teapot was commissioned in London by a charity. The name of the teapot is the Egoist, Egoist. And its value was determined by the materials that are used in its construction. The teapot featured a stunning inlay of 386 rubies, 1,658 diamonds, and 18 carats of gold at the base. And it had a huge ivory handle. And this comes from topictea.com/blog/teablog. interesting facts about tea.
That's expensive tea there.
Yeah, I can imagine it'll cost a few million. But nice. So then you changed into, you moved towards digital marketing. So what prompted that change, that decision to go down the marketing path?
I think what it was, you know, at the time, I think we had been branding and marketing the whole time I was an independent artist. We just didn't know what the name of it was, right? The okay. word branding and digital marketing, and none of that stuff wasn't, those terms weren't frequently used back then. So, you know, we had been doing that for years, just didn't ever knew that's what it was called, right? So as a record, as a recording artist, when it came to my logo, my website, social media, you know, at the time I got big on MySpace, right? So MySpace was the hot thing at the time when I was doing music. So we just never really knew that this whole time we've been marketing 20 years and didn't know what it was called, right? So we was doing logos, we were doing websites, we was making our own shirts, selling them at the shows. We reached out to different brands to sponsor the tour. So we were already doing these things. We just didn't know what it was called. And you know, as I got older, a friend of mine, he said, "Yo, you know, you're a branding genius." And I was like, "Well, what you mean when you say branding?" He's like, "Yo, you come up with an idea out of nowhere, and in 24 hours, you can have a logo, a website, merchandise, and do all of this. Why don't you do that for businesses, what you used to do for yourself in music?"
Interesting. So you'd say that you have quite a creative mindset?
Yes, definitely. So I really, once I get into the digital marketing space, nothing really changed for me. I was just doing the same stuff I've always done just for somebody else, whether there was a food truck or a guy who was a local plumber or whatever the case may be, the system was still the same. So when I say I got 20 years of marketing experience, people look at me like, "Yo, you don't even look 20 years old, right?" So I'm like, "Yo, I've been doing this for a long time."
Just with different names and different terminology, but still with a track record and credibility.
Exactly.
That's a fascinating, that's a really good way of looking at it. So are there any skills that you learned like when you were in university and when you were kind of flipping between working the day job and touring? Are there any of these, of those like skills that you've been able to like transfer into what you do today?
Nothing really as far as the actual engineering aspect of it, but the college experience taught me a lot about networking, right? So I tell people all the time, I tell music artists, yo, if you're in college, that's the perfect study group for you to practice your music on, right? You got a bunch of people on the same campus as you. If you can blow up on college, it's just as good as being in the industry, right?
Yeah.
So you think, you know, if it's 20, 30,000 students at a big university and you get maybe 10 to 15,000 fans out of that, you don't need a record label.
That's true. You've already got your base to build off.
You got a base. And that's just one local college, right? So what I used to do, a lot of my bookings used to come from Twitter. People would hit me on Twitter and say, "Oh, man, I would want you to come to our college for homecoming." And I would say, "Oh, well, reach out to your student advisors to bring me there." So I built my fan base off colleges. I didn't care about the industry or the record labels. I cared about growing organic fans. So we did that organically. We would just show up to people's college campus and perform.
That's cool in the sense of it's probably not what anybody else was doing like at the time.
Everybody wanted to be on the radio. I was doing college radio, touring on college radio. So, you know, those are the people that I wanted to target because these were the biggest consumers of music. Kids in college, high school kids, these are the people who bought the product. So I didn't care about the people who weren't in college because they didn't buy albums at the time.
And was this something that just like like happened? Was there a moment when this particular idea of targeting students and younger people like registered in your brain?
I think it was because I became very popular on campus for music, right? So I was just like, man, you know, I'm here at the University of Delaware. It's a fairly small college, but it's a lot of people from right. different cities that go to that school. So when I started looking at, you know, being able to just walk around campus and people want to take pictures and people want to, I'm like, we just classmates. Of course I take a picture with you. It's not, you know, I didn't look at it like how they looked at it, right?
Right.
So I always been a proof of concept guy. So once I can prove a concept works, I want to always scale it. So if it worked at University of Delaware, let's go to Villanova. Let's go to Delaware State. Let's go to Wesley. Like, so I just was like, hey, we proved that it works here. Let's make it bigger.
Awesome. So obviously, I think we're establishing the networking and you're fairly comfortable interacting with people in all different environments.
Definitely.
And backgrounds. But what are some new skills that you've kind of learned since you've moved into this more digital, I guess, focus
area? I think when I really started taking digital marketing serious, you know, it was definitely some skills that I needed to learn, right? So I understood marketing from a boots on the ground, old school networking standpoint. But because of the digital space is so big, I had to get better. You know, I had to get certified for Google Analytics. You know, I had to take classes on search engine optimization, you know, design and websites. You know, it was a lot of certifications that I went and got because, you know, if I was going to be doing this from, you know, multi-million-dollar companies, I need to be very knowledgeable when I'm speaking on what they need and, you know, how we can achieve what they need. So I didn't know what SEO was. I didn't know how to rank for keywords on Google. So this was stuff that I had to do to be even better than the next guy. You know, those certifications mean something when you go into a company and say, hey, I'm a certified Google analysis. You know, I understand how Google works. I have a SEO certification. You know, I have keyword rank research, all of these things, social media management. So, you know, you always, to me, they're all just the pieces of paper, but they mean something when you're dealing with big companies, you know,
okay.
You won't see that. So if you were somebody that was in digital marketing and I was somebody in digital marketing and they say, hey, Mike, are you certified in Google Analytics? And you say, no, I'm not. But then if they come to me and I am certified, that's just one little edge that I might have had up on you.
Right.
It's because even though we did the same thing, so I wanted to make sure I got all of those certifications. I wanted to understand how it worked. And then, you know, eventually I knew I wanted to hire people, right? So I didn't want to be able to hire people if I didn't know how to do it myself.
That's a very good point.
So that was my way of fact checking the people that I'm hiring to see, oh, okay, you know what you're doing because I've done it. So to me, experience is always the best teacher.
Awesome. And then so on your website, it says, everyone has a story to tell. Telling your story is essential, and I, in this context, make sure that your story is told to the masses. So how have you made use of this belief in establishing your own personal brand and telling your story?
So when I, you know, it's funny because, you know, when I was doing businesses, you know, so I own a marketing company called The Brand Castle. I own an interior design company called Paramount Design Concepts, and I also own a real estate photography company called Real Estate Captured, right? So the thing about these businesses is I always focused on the business, right? And I never really focused on Baron McQueen, right? So I put all the energy into growing social media with the business and growing all of these businesses. And what I found out was, once I started taking my personal brand serious, those just grew automatically without even having to dedicate time to them. So I tell people all the time, people will fall in love with you before they fall in love with your logo. So what I started doing, my Instagram is only 2 years old.
Wow.
I've only had that Instagram for 2 years. And for me, it was just like, you know, I wanted to really dedicate the time to grow my personal brand with my personal name, because everybody knew me from my industry name. And I wanted to disassociate myself because I wasn't an artist no more. So I wanted people to know what my real name was and who I am. And I just been really growing that. So, you know, I did a lot of, anybody who asked me for an interview, I did it. Anybody who wanted to put me on a podcast, I did it. Like, it wasn't a money thing for me. Like, if you wanted me to come speak at your weekly Rotary meeting, like, I would do it. I've done so many speaks, and it wasn't a money thing for me. It was just me. I was growing my personal brand. I wanted to meet as many people as possible. And of course, you know, now that COVID has hit, that stopped. But I really focused on just personal branding, man. I wanted to make sure when you Google my name, stuff came up.
it is definitely very consistent. The message that comes up about you on every single outlet and light source, for sure.
Of course. So, and that was what it was about, man. You know, I made a decision to focus on me and build up my personal brand, just as an industry expert in doing this, you know, marketing or PR, whatever the case may be. You know, when you're dealing with me from a PR standpoint, you're not dealing with a PR agency, right? You're dealing with a PR guy. Like, so this is what I do because I've done it for me. So I know how it works. I can write, and I have access to the outlets that everybody wants to be a part of. And now everybody wants an Instagram verification. And now, you know, these all things can't happen without good PR.
True. All right, nice. So what are three tips that you'd give someone that is trying to expand their personal brand?
Three tips. Tip number one, be authentic, right? I hate the fake it till you make it people. You know, online is so much people in this entrepreneurship, marketing space that have this lifestyle that they paint online, that once you get a Lamborghini, you made it, right? So I just try to be authentic. You know, I'm not a millionaire, and I'll tell people to their face, I don't have $1 million in the bank right now. And that's not what people in this space do. Everybody has this mentality that they made it already. They go rent out a Lamborghini, they take some pictures, they rent that Lamborghini out for $300 a day, take as many pictures as they can, and then they sell a lifestyle online. And so be authentic is super important to me, because people like me because I'm authentic. It's me. You know, I'm not putting on a front. I'm not doing nothing special. I'm just being me. And any day of the week, whoever you talk to me, you're going to get the same response. So I would say be authentic is number one. And then number two, I would say you got to fail at some stuff. I failed at some stuff. And I think people don't highlight those failures as lessons learned, right? So, for example, I give you a very great example. Had I not diversified my portfolio and had more than one business, I would be in trouble right now. Because when COVID hit, I lost every client for the Brand Castle from my marketing company. I have two clients left from that. And the problem is my clients were business owners. So if their business isn't doing well, they just trying to figure out how to keep the lights on. They can't pay me marketing, you know, $2,000 every month now. Now it's just like, Baron, we can't even afford you. We just trying to keep the lights on. So had I not diversified and had, you know, my real estate photography company, which blew up during COVID.
Interesting.
So it was just like, you know, I always tell people, diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. So now to me, I feel like one of my business is recession proof, like, or pandemic proof, let's say, because it's, you know, that's now my bread and butter. But had I not diversified, I'd be screwed, just like everybody else that's a business owner. So I think that's super important. It's all right to fail. But I think the problem with social media is like one big highlight reel, right? Everybody yes. always showcases the wins and nobody talks about the losses, right? Nobody. But I think it's in the losses where people like, you know what, man, that was brave of him to really talk about that. That I was feeling some type way about my situation, and to hear that from him, it's like, okay, I'm not alone in this situation. So it's okay to fail. I tell people that all the time, because then you learn. And number three would probably be invest in your personal brand. It's super important to invest in your personal brand. Like I said, when I was doing music, every dollar that I was making at that engineering firm was going right back into the product. Okay. And I think that's one of the things people don't understand. That whole spend money to make money is real. Like, you know, when I started taking my personal brand serious, I had to invest. You know, I had to get good photos. I had to hire a photographer to make sure my stuff was top quality. You know, I started meeting with different business owners. I had to buy new suits. I had to do everything. You know, all of these things cost money, but it was me investing in my personal brand. So those would be my three things, man.
Okay, so I asked you about three tips. What about, let's go, like, top two, like, skills that, because you mentioned that you also need to diversify a little bit, so everything's not in one basket.
Yeah.
So do you have a couple of, like, skills or, like, course recommendations that can help someone grow from the personal development standpoint?
I would tell people to, it don't matter what you do for business, you should always be learning marketing, period. It don't matter what your business is. If you own a taco truck, you own a hair salon, you own an online boutique, marketing is so important to any person that's trying to do business. And if you understand it as the business owner, just sharpening your skills a little bit, or even if you don't actually do it yourself, learning it and understanding it is super important. As a kid, I hated reading books. I read so much now, it's crazy. One tip, I think marketing is important. And if you're a good writer, there's a lot of people making great money copywriting for other businesses. On content creation, it's like, you know, if you had no money today, you can start a marketing company. It's just one of those businesses that you don't need to have the skills, really. You just need the leads, right? So, you know, if you have somebody looking for a logo, okay, that's how I started my marketing company. I started off doing logos, right? So I can make logos, but I rather pay somebody who that's all they do is make logos, and I just focus on getting leads, right? So we was doing logos for $200. I was paying a person on Fiverr, I think, like $10 to make a logo. So for every $200 logo, I was making money. I was making $190 of the profit and only paying $10 to the designer. And I built a brand castle like that. So I tell people, the middleman, you can make a lot of money as the middleman as long as you get the leads. So if you have people that's looking for website design and you don't know how to design websites, you find somebody who designs websites, you ask them how much they charge, and then you market up and you sell a service. That's it. So when it came to the marketing, you know, it was so much that you could do that you didn't really need any startup money to start an agency, right? So then everybody shifted. Everybody had a digital marketing agency, a social media management agency, because people that's busy, they don't have time to do social media. So they like, oh, I pay somebody a couple $100 a month to run my social media. You didn't need no degree for that. You can run an agency. So you know, those type of skills, if you can learn them, great, it's going to benefit you. But at the end of the day, you never going to be able to scale if you sacrificing the time it takes deliver a product, right? So I own a real estate photography company. If I sat and edited every person's photo that we shoot, I would only be able to do one person a day, right? Because it's a 24-hour turnaround. So if I shoot your product, your house on Monday, you expect it by Tuesday. So I can't shoot 5 clients in the same day if I don't have a team of editors. And, you know, it's always good to scale. That's how you're going to scale, is to be able to delegate to the right people and focus your time on things that are dollar productive.
Dollar productive. I like that one. Awesome. And then, so obviously we've talked a little bit about your music and then your journey into the PR stuff and social media and the marketing, et cetera. But another, I guess, string to your bow is, as you mentioned earlier, you like writing. Mm-hmm. And I believe you're also an author. And mm-hmm. you recently wrote the book, Why Won't My Business Grow? So why did you decide to write this particular book, and what's it about?
So Why Won't My Business Grow? Usually when authors write a book, right, they write a book about their journey and, you know, how great they are now that they've already made it, right? So when I wrote this book, I wrote this book from an employee standpoint. I was working for people. So I got access to, you know, the information after you, like you said, I worked for one company for 13 years, right? So when you've been at a company that long, you know, you get information and you get cool with the business owners and things like that. So you understand how they make their money, where money is being spent. And it was a lot of information that I felt like past business owners didn't understand about the business and how to grow the business. You know, they were cool with just if they made $3 million 1 year and then they made $3 million the next year, that was good for them. Like, and I'm like, yo, if you made 3 this year, you should make 6 next year, right? So it was really tips to really, these are some things you should look for. These are some steps you should be doing. These are the research you should be doing. You should know what your competition is doing. You should know what your competition is charging, because every sale that your competition gets, that could have been your sale. So that's how you have to look at it. So, you know, I kind of break down those. It's almost, I think it's 6 or 7 steps that's really vital in the success of growing a business and not just maintaining. Because I think a lot of business owners just maintain and they look at, if they didn't go negative, they look at that as that was the positive, right? So, right. Yo, if I did 3 million, as long as I don't do 2 million, I'm okay. And it's like, yo, you should always be growing every year.
Awesome. And then so in order to gather this perspective from your own experience, did you sit down and like interview people?
I didn't really interview. I would say working for people, I took a lot of mental notes.
Okay.
Yeah, and I just kind of, you know, from my past experience, I was able to share. You know, I started doing some consulting for some businesses before I even wrote the book, just on simple things. You know, I think it's a lot of business owners, their company don't grow because they don't understand their employees, right? So when you don't treat the employees as if they're other business owners, that's the type of work value you get out of that employee, right? So if you have a disgruntled employee, eventually that's going to affect your money. So it's always an understanding that I think business owners don't take into consideration the relationships that they have with the people that work for them, because ultimately those are the people that make the boat work.
Exactly. Awesome. And then so to kind of close out, what is one piece of advice that you would give to aspiring entrepreneurs, given what's going on in the world with the pandemic? How can someone keep improving and sharpen their skills and personal development your growth could become like quite stagnant at this time with everything going on?
My word of advice to any entrepreneur is to really just start. I meet a lot of people that have really great ideas, and for whatever reason, they are scared to just start. what you got to do, what this pandemic has done for a lot of people in the entrepreneur space, is it's weeded out the people who were not as serious or focused or driven, right? So because the entrepreneur, I'm almost don't even like the word anymore because it don't hold no weight. Everybody's an entrepreneur, right? You sell toothpicks on the side of the road, now you're toothpick. Yeah, everybody's an entrepreneur, but it's like at the end of the day, it's like I'm all for people being their own bosses. And it's okay. Some people just not meant to be entrepreneurs. And that's cool too, because some of these big companies don't run without great employees.
That's true.
So I always stress that entrepreneurship is not for everybody, but if you have an idea, just start. A lot of people don't just start, and they have a great idea and they look up and 3 years went by and they still haven't started. They still working on the website for 3 years. They still working on developing the product for 3 years. Yo, just put some stuff out. Like, don't be scared. Just start. So, you know, I wish I started sooner. That was one of my regrets. I should have been at 18. I should have had more than the businesses that I have now. But
and you're not even doing bad. Like,
but that's what I'm saying. So think about the position I'm in now. Had I did this at 18, I'd be killing the game, right? So, but it was just, you know, I had a nice job and I was comfortable and, you know, it was no real sacrifice. And, you know, once I started working for myself, I tell people you cannot put a price on the flexibility of working for yourself. Like, if I want to go somewhere tomorrow, I don't have to call off work. I don't have to get vacation time. I just go. And that price of that type of freedom and flexibility is priceless.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the Tea with Mike show. And
thank you.
I really enjoyed hearing bits of your story and
definitely transition
into what you're doing today.
I appreciate your time and reaching out. And, you know, I'm always, I can talk whenever anybody want to talk, man. I'm always interested in, you know, sharing my story. If it could help anybody that's an aspiring entrepreneur or business owner or whatever the case may be, you know, that's what I do it for.
Awesome. All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Barion. Hope you took some value from it. And if you've still got some time on your hands, there's plenty more of more stories and tea facts and tea drinking on my website. Go watch some of the others. I'll see you on teawithmike.com. One last time. Thanks, man. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's the Tea with Mike show.